At 8:22, we're joined by Dr. Ron House, John A. Logan College president, our guest this morning. Hi, Ron. How are you?
Good morning, Tom. I'm very well. Thank you.
Ron and I were just chatting before we went on the air, and I was asking him, I said, so this one and one more in December, and then we're done with interviews. December 31st, your last day, John A. Logan College president?
That is all correct, yes.
Well, I'm gonna miss talking to you. Doesn't mean we can't talk anymore, though, does it?
No, we can talk. I'm gonna miss it too. As you recall, you had a hard time talking me into doing this on a regular basis, and I'm glad I let you talk me into it. I've enjoyed it. I look forward to it every month. It's a great opportunity for the college. It's a great opportunity to talk to the people that listen to you all over Southern Illinois about what we're doing and how we're doing it. And it certainly adds to the transparency of everything. And so I appreciate the opportunity very much, and I'm glad you're letting me do it.
Well, I've enjoyed it a great deal. I can only hope that you will give that short speech to one of the five candidates that I read about yesterday. Five candidates announced for the Presidential Search Screening Committee to select. These are the finalists. Is that correct?
That's right. These are the finalists. We had a screening committee comprised of various constituency groups of the campus, and everybody was represented. Every group was represented. We received 50 something applications. Those were pared back by the screening committee to the five that we currently have, and those five will be interviewed by the Board of Trustees, and presumably one of them will become the next president here.
David Bath, Chancellor at Ivy Tech Community College in Lafayette, Louisiana, or Lafayette, depending on where you are. Kirk Overstreet.
Lafayette, Indiana.
Lafayette, Indiana. You go to Tennessee and they go Lafayette. So,
okay.
Kirk Overstreet, the Assistant Provost of Instruction at the College of DuPage. Paige Niehaus, Executive Vice Chancellor and Chief Innovation Officer at Wayne County Community College. Scott Stallman, the Vice President of Instruction and CAO at Lone Star College in Tumwal, Texas, and Melanie Picord, who is the Vice President for Instructional Services at John A. Logan College. That's a diverse group.
It is a diverse group. It's a good group. We're very happy and pleased with the people that applied, and certainly the finalists that will go through the interview process, and they're all highly qualified, capable people, and so the board will have a difficult decision to make.
You know, when it comes to education, the biggest challenge that we've seen, and really not a lot of experience to base decision-making on, is how COVID is handled among a faculty and students. And I run into it time and time again talking to other people and a ton of other businesses. One person shows up sick. What do we do about contacts? What do we close? What do we keep open? What do we put masks on? When they come back, when are they clear again? And it's almost like an atomic reaction, right? You remember those cartoons you see in the 50s where one atom come in and the other ones all hit everything else? I don't think that's inaccurate in many ways.
Yes, it is. We have a... Well, first of all, when all of this began in March, everybody in the state thought that it would have run its course sometime in the summer. If you'll recall, they were saying, well, when the weather warms up and heat and all of that, the virus is going to go away. I don't know. There might have been a little lull in the action in the summer, but it didn't go away. And we're in a, I'm speaking generally now, we are in a full-fledged second surge, rekindling of all of this, or whatever you want to call it. And two or three months ago, we hired a coordinator of COVID activity. And that person is a trained healthcare professional, retired, and she does a great job in working with those people that are positive. She does a great job in working with the county health agencies, the state health agencies, keeping us on track with the requirements for the CDC and various things of that nature. And so she has a big job, and she has a lot to do, and she coordinates all of that. You know, here's what you got to do to get a test. Here's what you got to do to come back if you test positive. And so we have a pretty well organized way that we deal with that. Now, the problem, of course, is you have to deal with that. And everybody that tests positive, or everybody that has been exposed to a positive, either gets either gets isolated, quarantined, or something like that. And so if that turns out to be a faculty member, then you've got to deal with that, because that person is going to be gone a couple of weeks at least. And so it's a difficult thing to administer and manage, but so far we've been able to do that. And our face-to-face classes, about 20% of our instruction is face-to-face on this campus. And that ends on November the 20th. And so that is a plateau for us. We're certainly making every effort that we can to get to November the 20th and maintain our face-to-face classes. But I would tell you, from what, although this is not quite true here at the campus, but in the Southern Illinois community, the cases are getting more and more. Public schools are thinking more seriously about closing down. Some of them specifically have even sent out communications that you better find a place to keep your kids, because we may have to shut this down. And so we're not to that point, although our number of cases is growing a little bit. We have a few more people that are positive or that have been exposed to positive than we did a couple of weeks ago. But we're not close to shutting down at this point in time. And so we're hoping to get into the holiday season, and at that point we could manipulate schedules any way that we need to manipulate them until January. So that's basically our report. Although it could proliferate here at any time, and we would have to just react to it in whatever fashion we had to. But at this point, we're as good as anybody else, and we're trying to maintain that.
You know, the guy who got me in this funnel a long time ago was Glenn Pichard, and we were talking about privacy in colleges. And there's a lot of laws, not all of them just solely college, that were made before COVID-19 that make some of these conversations you just described difficult. The HIPAA regs, right? And somebody wants to know who it was that tested positive. You can't say he, she. You can't say, right, their names. You can't do that.
That's right.
And then the person you're having that conversation.
Usually the way that works is somebody shows up for work and their office mate is not there. And it turns out their office mate might be sick. And so they figured out pretty quickly who it might be. But in terms of releasing names or anything of that nature, it's prohibited by law.
And it ticks them off.
Yes, it does.
And they think you should, right? And that's not, you've got a lot of cool, I mean, you can't, if somebody turned up sick, right, in one way or another, you're not even supposed to call their parents. You know, there's a lot of regulations here that pre-COVID are complicating administrators, whether it's a college or a construction site, when it comes to dealing with this.
That's right. Most of our students that are here, nearly all of them, are 18 years old. They're emancipated. And so we deal with them directly, not their parents. Public school is a little different than that. But it is different here, and we just have to deal with it the way it is. And we've been able to manage that thus far. But I don't know where the end of this is, Tom. Nobody does.
Yeah.
And I don't know, even if it were to be announced today that there's a cure-all vaccine for this, I don't know how long it'd take that to work through the system, and I don't know how much faith people would have in that. And so many people don't take the regular flu shot now. I don't know whether they take a coronavirus shot or not.
Right.
And so I don't know that all of that ends immediately. I don't think it does.
You know, this morning, the minute we started in our first newscast and the governor's reaction to the fair tax failure, I started getting texts about your appearance this morning. And basically, the summation is, ask Dr. Ron House how John A. Logan College is positioned to be able to deal with substantial cuts on a state level. You know, and sure, this is early because we just learned about it, I mean, day before yesterday, right? But, you know, many people are already concerned about, you know, the cuts. Because here's the thing, you and I, Ron, we didn't fall off the cabbage wagon yesterday. The governor says, you know, you're going to pay. We always were going to pay. That's right, in one form or another. If it was, well, the rich person's going to be, well, how do you think the rich person gets the money selling stuff to other people, right? We're always going to pay in some form or another. But you've given this some thought?
Well, we have. First of all, it's always fascinating how you want to punish the people that you're supposed to be serving. And that's an interesting concept to me. I'm not just picking on the governor or anybody in particular, but we in public service, we have to, we are a function of society. Society is not a function of us. And so we have a mission to carry out and provide our services as best we can within the resources and social structure that we're in. And so we deal with that. We, as you know, in 16, we cut way back all of a sudden. Ever since 16, Tom, we have been watching what we do here very closely. We've been planning for any disruption of state funds that we might have that would could cause us significant difficulty. And so at this moment, we do have a plan to keep this place running at full capacity. We have had a number of retirees. We've developed a retirement incentive program. We've had a number of people that are retiring. We've got a number of people that are retiring in 21, which will be beneficial as well. Some of them will be replaced. Some of them will not. And so we've been looking toward this issue for a long time, even before this tax plan was put on the ballot. And so I think Logan will be disrupted as little as possible. I don't know until we know how deep the cuts will actually be. It's hard to say what we will do, but it's been on our radar ever since we laid people off in the spring of 16.
Right. You know, there's something, I listen very closely to the sound of your voice and the way you present. And what's interesting is I didn't hear at the prospect of this, and the governor said, we're going to cut, and then, of course, you know, 20% and all these other things, right? And raise tax. I didn't hear a guy that was getting ready to go out of the parking lot and rip his shirt and scream at the sky. I heard a guy who say, yeah, things like this happen. We've been planning for it. Don't tell me how we can't do it. Let me show you how we can. That's what I heard in your voice. And I think the psychological, pardon me, predisposition, right? That, yeah, it happens. We're going to fix it. We're going to do it. We're going to stick with our mission. I think that hearing that, I found that very encouraging, Ron, and I probably don't hear it enough.
Well, you know, it's you play the cards you're dealt. And if you have to reduce your expenditures, you find a way to do that. If you've got more money than you know what to do with, you try to use that money productively in a lot of different ways. And store some of it back, but it's an everyday occurrence. It's just running this college is no different than life. Some years are good, some years are not so good. You got these expenses, that expenses, and you just have to deal with that. And so, it's not earth shattering. There's nobody walking down the hall in tears in this. We'll figure it out, and it'll be fine. And so, you know, we're not punishing anybody here. Our mission is to serve people and serve our students and serve our community, and we're going to continue to do that whether we're rich or poor. And we're not rich and we're not poor. We're somewhere in between that. And so that's just the way it is.
And so that's the same psychological predisposition when changes were made about educational programs on colleges. In particular, I'm asking about these diversity programs that you have changed, postponed, put on hold after orders and signatures by the president in D.C.
Well, actually, we responded. Our response was in connection with an email advisory that we got from the Illinois Community College Diversity Commission, which said, take a look at the executive order, because the penalties for violating it could cost you your federal money. And so we paused. We've certainly continued. We've had additional diversity activities and continue to do that. But we paused on one that was scheduled to go in just a few days and took a look at that. And so, you know, regardless of our own personal feeling, we have to be prudent with how we deal with our taxpayers' money. But Tom, we get about $11 or $12 million. It's probably up this year because of the virus money and all of that from the federal government. We can't survive very well without that $10 or $12 million. And so the prudent thing to do, in our opinion, was let's just step back, take a look at this. Whatever we're doing, we'll fix it to make sure that it complies and move forward. And that's what we did.
Was there anything in that diversity program that you questioned its legitimacy on an academic level?
Not on an academic level.
On what level then?
Well, it turned out to be an interesting situation with the people that with the person that was supposed to do the presentation, and so that gave us a little pause within itself, and we looked at that as well. And that event may be rescheduled at some point. I'm not saying that it won't. We're still looking at that. And so we've gotten by that one, and we've moved forward with that. And but we take a look at all of our events in a different way than we did before in order to prevent any conflict at all with the advisory council's communique or with the executive order, that kind of thing. Right. I don't know where this executive order goes if Mr. Trump's not the president.
Right.
And so maybe this is a phase that we just passed through. But anyway, we're fine. We're up and running. We have cultural events and diversity events. We have a well-established diversity committee whose goal is to help us attract more minority students and more qualified minority candidates for our positions. And so we're certainly moving forward. We have a strong diversity program. That was just a little blip on the radar.
Dr. Ron House, who's, of course, going to be seeing his retirement from John A. Logan College. He was only supposed to be a temp. And here he is looking at leaving the faculty and staff on December 31st. What's the best part of the job, the best part? And I'm not talking about necessarily over this year, your entire experience at John A. Logan College. If you were to say, I love this job, what would be the reason why?
This job is very challenging. It taxes you mentally and physically, and that is the part of the job that I enjoy. It's the constant challenge on a daily basis, and so that's the part that I'll miss. But I'll find some other way to be challenged.
All right. Dr. Ron House, John A. Logan College. Quickly, before I let you go, you heard that fuss between the IHSA and the governor and whether they're going to play sports basketball. What's your story on decision-making and guidance that you achieved from John A. Logan College and being able to keep your insurance, which has also been threatened at some of the high school level, if they go ahead with basketball? So how do you see the program at John A. Logan College, in particular basketball? Because it draws a lot of attention to the college and also gives some young people an opportunity they wouldn't have otherwise with scholarships. So what's next for this and moving forward?
We have been planning ever since the beginning of fall semester, or about that, to comply with the National Junior College Athletic Association rules and regulations, and we are scheduled to have our fall sports starting in January, and we're moving toward that, and that's the schedule we're on, and that's the schedule that we're anticipating on keeping at this point in time. The unknown factor in that, Tom, is exactly what this virus will look like when January gets here. And so it is certainly conceivable that that plan would change based on the virus. But at this moment, we have been planning on sports beginning in January for several months now, and that's where we're at, and that's where we're going to be.